Okay, we're looking at now as the beginning. Whenever I do a talk, I go through, there's a online site that I like to go try to find pictures for, and I usually do find pictures that are appropriate, and I hit, this was the first one up, and I just thought that's perfect for the thought of beginning now, you know, and I guess in some sense it may look like that's a big task before that child. But nobody says he's going to go up the stairs. You know, he could turn around and do something else. But it's, and for those of you that are YouTubers and Facebookers, I think our online audience now, I publish the talk on to about 500 people on my sites. And then the church has a Facebook page that has about 1,000, over a little over 1,000 followers. So, and they will get the opening. I put an opening on the talk, and this is the picture they'll get. So they'll know what I'm talking about when I'm saying it. They won't just be looking at my face. But I like this idea of beginning. And see, the kid is not really looking up the stairs. He's just looking at them. He's looking at the next step. And that's what I liked about it. It's like, so maybe there is this big flight of stairs in front of us. But we don't look up the whole flight of stairs. We look at the next step. I've shared that story with you when we went to the Grand Canyon. You know, we hiked down into it like a couple of idiots. And it just took 3 hours to get down there, you know, because of the gravity thing. It makes it pretty easy. But coming back up, I think it took 7 or 8 hours to get out. And I was considering feigning a heart attack so the helicopter would come and get us. But I didn't have to feign too much. I was almost having a heat stroke. But what I started doing on the way out, and if you've ever done that hike, I don't recommend doing the day hike if you're out of shape like we were from Missouri at the time. But what I started doing, which was very helpful, was focusing on the next bend in the path rather than thinking, I've got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. It was, you know, it was 75 degrees or something like that on the rim, and then we get down inside, it's 104. So a very different place. So needless to say, there aren't too many places I was glad to get out of. You know, if you want to see the Grand Canyon, the very best way to see it is from the rim. You truly do not get a sense of, if you've been inside of it, many of you have, you don't get a sense of the canyon at all when you're inside. So the best view is from the rim. But coming out of it was a chore and was a very difficult thing. And I just found that if I would break it up into just make it to that next corner, you know, that's bringing all of your awareness, all of your attention into the now moment, basically. That I don't have to live a successful life the rest of my life. I just have to make it to that next corner. I just have to take that step that's in front of me, like this little boy is looking at. Just one thing to do. And that's to be here in this now moment. And it is so easy to look up that flight of stairs and think, gosh, that's a long way. That's a lot of work in front of me. I don't know if I can do that. And what's after that? What's on that next level? It looks like it all just starts all over again. And so we start thinking, is it worth it? You know, we go through this stuff and start projecting. So we focus on where we are, and there's a principle involved in this, a spiritual principle that I want to focus on today, and it comes from the first chapter of John, and I have kind of revised it. I did this in my book, The Complete Soul. The original wording is, the Word was in the beginning with God, and I have changed this to bring it closer to us, so we understand it, because I think this is what it really means, that I replaced the Word with the soul. The soul was in the beginning with God. All things were made through the soul. Now, and think of your life as you're hearing this. And without the soul was not anything made that was made. And I have a question mark there, and it should be a period. I asked Audrey to change that on the program, and I didn't change it on my program. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But this is the principle, and it is a very important principle. The soul is in the beginning with God. You are complete. You are fully immersed right now in the presence of God. And you are the light of God shining, and this light shines always. It is never stopped. It cannot stop. We can block it with our thinking, with our emotions. We can cover it with a bushel basket of our negativity. We can act in our life as if God is absent. And you know what? That's what most religions are based on, the belief that God is absent. I was writing an article this morning about this. I'm going to do a question and answer on. If you haven't seen our website lately, the unitygj.org, I put on put an article on there about the guiding principles of independent unity. So I opened up with what those are, the three ideas: our understanding of the nature of God, our understanding of the nature of ourselves, the individual, and our understanding of the relationship between the two. And one of the questions I'm going to answer that has been asked is, don't you consider prayer, for example, as a principle? And I will say no. Prayer is not a principle. It is based on principle. Prayer itself is not a principle, because if a mainstream Christian would walk through this door and we would ask them, do you pray? They would say yes. But do you think their answer is the same as yours would be? Because I would ask all of you, do you pray? And you'd say yes. Do we mean the same thing? A principle means the same thing. It's universal. 2 and 2 is 4. That's a universal principle. It doesn't matter who walks through the door. 2 and 2 is still 4, wherever they come from. But our understanding of prayer changes based on the underlying principles that we accept as being true. If I pray to God as if God is absent, I pray probably from a beseeching, petitionary way. God has something I don't have, and I need it, and I'm going to ask for it. And hopefully God will give it to me. So I'm using prayer as a means of bridging the gap of separation. God's out there someplace, and I'm here, and I have this problem. God has the answer, and I want to make that connection. So I'm praying as if God is absent, and I'm hoping that I've been good, and I've, you know, fulfilled whatever part of the bargain would make God behave favorably on my behalf. But if I believe that God is centered in me and I am one with that, that I cannot ever break that relationship, then I don't pray to God as if I'm lacking something. I may have forgotten something. But I begin my prayer as an affirmation. We call it affirmative prayer. I begin making statements that are true of who I am, true of what my relationship to God is. You know, when we say there is but one presence, one power, that's an affirmation. It's an affirmative prayer. It's not asking anything of that one presence and one power. It's an acknowledgement. So here's where I begin. There's one presence, one power. And that's good. God, the good. So I would say my prayer would be an attitude of greater good is now unfolding through me. I've taken an affirmative approach. I'm not saying, God, how about a little more greater good? Can you give me some greater good in my life? But if there's only one presence, one power, God the good, that means I am immersed in that goodness. So I open my mind to that greater good unfolding. Rather than focus on the problem, which shuts down all my creativity, captures the imagination, I'm open to something greater than what's going on in my brain. There is one presence, one power working through me. That one presence, one power is good. So it knows how, it's intelligent, it knows how to break down whatever it is that's in my mind, in my life, in the relationships that I have. It knows how to break it down so that goodness may shine forth. See, that's the light shining in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. That's what it means. That's happening all the time. So affirmative prayer is aligning our thinking with that principle. Prayer itself is not a principle, any more than working the mathematical problem is the principle. The principle is the mathematical problem itself. My working of it is not a principle. Because I can come up with an error. My working can come up with 2 + 2 = 5. And that's an error, not a principle. But if somebody says, you know, my prayer is a principle, that would mean that it's subject to error. So we're not talking about prayer is a technique for aligning ourselves with what is true. That's all it is. That's the idea of praying without ceasing, as Paul said. It's a consciousness of alignment with that light that shines in the darkness. So we've got this problem, and we're here sitting, feeling very much alone, like, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to solve this. So what about that light? What's it doing? Is it saying, well, as soon as you get this solved, I'll be back? It doesn't do that. It's pushing. It's shining. It's radiating. So where's our attention? So the mainstream Christian would say, you know, I feel this way, there's something lacking, so I look up to the sky, or I look to, you know, God someplace other than here. And I try to make a connection with that through prayer. So you see what the difference is from the traditional point of view, and I'm not just talking Christian, I'm talking every mainline religion. You look at them. Every one of them is based on the idea that God is separate, with the exception probably of Hinduism and some of the Eastern thoughts. But the Hindu can behave just as much as if they believe God is separate from them, because you get into this whole idea of reincarnation and karma and caste systems and all of that, which they don't formally recognize now, but that stuff doesn't really leave our consciousness. There's all kinds of ways we can invent separation. You can affirm your oneness or that God is one all day long and still practice separation. I've said that many times about the whole, we've gotten rid of the devil, but what about negative thinking? We can wreak havoc on ourselves, thinking that my negative thinking is going to destroy me. You don't need a devil. You got yourself. You got your own negative thinking. So we're trading one secondary power for another. It's my power of thought. It's destroying my life. It's making my life miserable. And if I just think positive, get my mind back, and that's true. But as I have said many times, thinking is a reaction. It is an effect. It's not a cause. It's an effect. When it becomes clear to you that that light is shining at your core and it can never leave you, never ever abandon you, your thinking will change. You'll think, I don't have to worry about offending God. That's a big thing. It's a big thing with a lot of people. If you've been down a pretty rough path in your life, you're going to probably think you have a lot of amends to make, and maybe you do, but not for God. And that's, again, Jesus' prodigal son. The father did not forgive the prodigal son for making all those mistakes because he never condemned him. We are never condemned by this light that's shining within us. It cannot condemn. It does not have that ability. if we say God can do all things, well, that's one thing God cannot do is condemn you. And when you get that into your thinking, or you get that into your consciousness, your thinking will follow a completely different path. I don't have to overcome the anger of God in order to pray. All I have to do is align myself with what is true of God. So this idea, if you think of your soul is eternal, it's always been, it is grounded completely in the infinite, in God. From the very beginning, there's no beginning really, it's just a way to say something, but all things were made through the soul. And see, that's where it gets a little bit sticky, because you say, well, my life is not working so well. Have you always been aware of your soul? Have you always been aware of that deeper level of your being? And what happens when you're not? We behave as if God is something separate from us. So we get that result. Our life looks as if God is absent. But that's only because of our perception. It's a perceptual problem. It's not, 2 and 2 is never 5, no matter how many times you say it. You can't make it so. So you bring your thinking back, or you, first of all, you look at the principle and you say, well, that makes sense. 2 and 2 is 4. Oh, that changes the way I think. That changes the way I think about all the problems I've been having. No wonder I've been having so many problems. It's not my thinking. It's I've been basing my thinking on the wrong perception, the wrong principle, or the wrong idea. So if you, like, this would be true of the mainstream Christian, believe that you were born in sin, that's a pretty difficult equation to work out. Because you were born, and if you were born in sin, then you're in it. There's nothing you can do about it. The whole idea there is you're born a sinner, you're born into this lesser state, and your job is to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior from what? From burning in hell. You're already destined to hell, according to that thought, if you're born in sin. You're already destined to hell. So your job from that perspective is to do something that will get you out of that. You'll get out of hell free card, which is some religious ideology. But see, you have to start with the idea that you're separate from God. And if you change that, it'll change the whole way you think about it. None of us were born in sin. None of us. Not one person was born in sin. I don't care how you came onto this planet. Not one of us was born in sin. It is a divine unfolding. It is born in love. And we may have been born into some rough circumstances and all that, but that's the physical side. It has nothing to do with the soul. And you could say, well, if the soul was in such great shape, why would it be born into something like that? I guess that's a subject for another talk. But we're going to talk about it a little bit today, if I just move on now. So the suggestion here is that the world as you know it is a creation of your soul. Does this mean that the problem you're praying to resolve is one that you created? You could say, yes, I'm responsible for bringing this on. And you can speculate on all the many possible ways that you did it. That's not unusual. It's not unusual in New Thought to say, I created my life as it is. So, okay. And that is true. Because you take any individual, you take any life, any person's life, and you look at that life, and it begins with the individual. The way it unfolds begins with us. There's no doubt about that. So, as within, so without. But it's the within at a certain level. There's a deeper within that we need to touch. And that's the next step. When we understand the creative process is at work now, we also see that this question of our role in the problem is the wrong starting point. We put ourselves in an endless loop of cause and effect that has no satisfying outcome. We become the hamster running on the wheel who always gets off the exact same place he got on. In other words, why is my life like it is? I try to go through all my inventory of thought and feeling and self-perceptions and all that to come up with the things I'm doing wrong and causing the problem. But that is kind of the wrong question. And this was brought to light in a story with Jesus when some disciples brought a blind man born blind to him and asked, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And that's the question that we ask. Why is it like it is? And he answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be made manifest in him." He responds in a completely different way. Who sinned, this man or his parents? That's the wrong question. Because you can get into a debate, and I'm sure they did, about how these things manifest. How do problems manifest? Who's responsible? What did I do to bring this on? It's the illustration I've used about walking through the desert, falling into a hole. How did I get here? It doesn't matter so much how you got there as what you're going to do about it. What's the action you take? It's not that this man has sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be made manifest in him. So in other words, there's an opportunity for a new beginning here. We stop looking for the cause of why this condition came about, because you probably will never resolve it. And it's speculation. It's so much of it is speculation when you say, "Well, maybe I was doing this, or I remember thinking something negative the other day and something bad happened to me." Probably a result. You can try to track all that stuff down. It doesn't matter what you were doing back then. What matters is what you're doing now. That's what he's saying. That this now moment is a new beginning. It's an opportunity to start again. And why is that true? Because in the beginning is your soul. And your soul is in God, and God is in your soul. In other words, it's all new at that deeper level. So up here at the head level and the heart level, where it's all these ideas are turning around, that's old. That's history. That's the effect. And then on top of that, you look out at your life, which is even further in the past, because it's the effect of other things. And you're looking into the past, and how can you change the past? And what Jesus is saying here is you don't change the past. It doesn't matter how this came about. So your life is a mess. Okay, let's agree on that. Our life is a mess. How to get this way? Don't ask that question. What do you do to get out of this? How do you start a new cause? How do you initiate a new cause? That's the question that should be asked. That's what the disciples should have asked Jesus. I'm glad they didn't, because now we have a good sermon material and we can all relate to it, because we're always asking why. Why is this man born blind? Who sinned? You know, it has to do with sin. Who did something wrong to get this result? It's just kind of born into us. I think our culture is focused on that type of thing, especially with our religious upbringing, that is starts out with "you're born in sin." Okay, then everything else follows. It must be something I did wrong. So that's the wrong question, is not why was this man born blind, but is there something we can do right now that will begin to change that condition? And of course, in the story, Jesus healed him. He brought about a healing. And it may be that whatever discussion they had or whatever happened following that was the first time that person had ever heard it. Doesn't matter what you did or what your parents did. Maybe that kid was told. You know, Elvis Presley had a twin, apparently, that was stillborn. And his umbilical cord was wrapped around its neck. And Elvis Presley said his aunt said he murdered that child and that he lived with that, you know, all of his life. It's like I did something bad, you know, all my life. I murdered somebody. So if you live with that kind of thinking, you start from the premise that I'm no good. You know, there's something wrong with me. So how can you improve on that, you know? It's like, well, I'm just getting what I deserve. That's the 2 + 2 = 5. The 5 is what you deserve. You're blind. So you're blind because you did something wrong. So we just start at the end and we try to work our way back to what are all the figures in this formula? Let's stop working that formula and say this moment is a new opportunity to show the works of God. That's another way of saying to understand yourself from a deeper level. The light is shining within you. It never has stopped. You've turned away from it. But we turn back to it and say there's one presence, one power, and that is absolute good. And that is now working out through this blindness, you know, whatever form that blindness takes. And it takes a lot of forms in our lives. It takes the form of fear, uncertainty about the future, all kinds of things that weigh us down. But that young man probably never heard any conversation outside of that who sinned. Who caused this? Jesus took it off that table and said, that doesn't matter. Let's look at something else here. And that in itself could have been enough to trigger a healing. Maybe I'm not responsible for it. Maybe there is a higher law at work in my life right now. It's opening to new possibilities. That's faith. That's our faith faculty. It doesn't matter how the problem got here. We want to know how to initiate a new cause that will resolve it. The light is shining now. If there's something blocking this light, and that would be like something like my endless analysis, for example, then I see a shadow. Does it matter how that block got there? And I have always thought that if you need to know how the block got there, if you need to know what caused the blindness, it'll come to you. You'll see it. You'll understand it. But the chances are good you won't need to know it, because that's a whole different life. It's a whole different way of thinking. You live your whole life as a blind person, and then you regain your sight or gain your sight, and you're no longer that person. It's a life that no longer exists. So the questions that you ask then don't apply now. You get on with your life. That's part of the whatsoever you ask for in prayer, believe you've received it. That's going from, instead of affirming, I'm blind, I can't see why, I am now open and receptive to the vision of God, the sight of God, the light that shines within me. Apply this to whatever situation that you're going through. It doesn't matter why or how you got here. What matters is what you're doing now, this very moment. We remove the block by acknowledging that the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not have the power to overcome it. The light is the only power. We're not ignoring the problem, and that's important, not sticking our head in the sand. We're acknowledging the creative process that brings our inner light to the surface. So we're not ignoring the problem, and somebody would say if you turn away from the problem, you're ignoring it. Don't think of it that way. You want to acknowledge if there's a problem in your life. You don't want to deny it. People do that all the time, and they never resolve it. It's like the world falls apart all around them, and they say, What problem? You know, there's no problem here. It's everybody else. So we acknowledge that, but then we move into a different level of understanding that the light that I'm seeking is always here. I have done nothing to break it, to offend it, to send it off in some other direction. I can't do that. So we're acknowledging the creative process that brings our inner light to the surface. Okay? So you understand the difference in petitionary prayer and affirmative prayer, right? Affirmative goes along with what is true of you at the deepest level. Petitionary acts as if you don't have that and you need it from another source. Okay? So look at the website. If you haven't already, the Guiding Principles of Independent Unity, and because I'm going to do a series of articles on this question of what are we, and I think that you'll find it helpful. All right. Thank you for coming out.